Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. You're tuned in to Columbo Chronicles at Blog Talk Radio. Follow the mover and shaker, award-winning author and host, seen on TV and radio, Rose Columbo. Every Wednesday, Rose interviews prominent experts and authors on politics and social justice. Call in and listen or ask the guests a question at 646-564-9742. Now, here's Rose.
Hi, everyone. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo, right here for you on Columbo Chronicles Live. Every Wednesday evening, we have very special guests from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast, and that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast for all you sleepyheads out there. And this is worldwide online radio, so you can listen anywhere in your area or your country. So just check the time, bookmark us, and listen every Wednesday evening. Or it could be morning or afternoon in your area, right? That's right. But welcome, welcome to Columbo Chronicles Live. And you can also scroll down at blogtalkradio.com/Columbo Chronicles, and you will see a list of very special guests with their expertise and topics. And you can take your choice and listen to the special guest and the topic of your choice. All shows are archived. So, first of all, our special guest tonight is a really special person. He's an author of science fiction. His name is Mark Kingston Levin. And he's going to also talk to us about climate change, hopefully, because we're all wondering if it's a hoax or if it's real. And also, he is a pilot, and I'll tell you a little bit more about him in just a little bit when we enter into the world of authors and experts. But first of all, I would like to extend my sincere condolences to the families and my prayers and our family's prayers to the victims of the Las Vegas shooting and those who survived and the family members of those who didn't survive. And I want to thank President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump for visiting the victims and their families in such a timely manner when they definitely need to know that the country is with them and praying for them. I'm particularly concerned because my daughters and their friends were going to attend. Fortunately, it was a blessing they did not go. But some of their friends did go, and we were texting them while it was going on that evening, and they were traumatized. They were escaping. Fortunately, they got back safely, but they said they're was a horrific scene and a lot of blood. And I'm sure that even those who escaped will need your prayers too. It's not something these majority of young people are going to forget anytime soon. Not that we should ever forget it, but overcome the trauma. And I just heard that over in North Korea, they plan on detonating an H-bomb, who Kim Jong-un says will be worse than Hiroshima. I mean, that leader needs to calm down. It's really, really frightening for most people. And then back to the Las Vegas shooting, the girlfriend, Mary Lou Delny, returned from the Philippines to the USA to speak with the investigators. And according to her attorney, she knew absolutely nothing about his intent to shoot and kill American innocent Americans at the Route 91 concert. So I'm sure that we'll hear more about that incident, since she did live with him and she did know him very well. And it's alleged she took 23 weapons to Vegas and nobody noticed. And it would seem that she knew he had weapons in their home in Las Vegas, but I guess the police will have to figure all that out. It's really complicated, and I'm sure they're trying to put all the pieces together. On the news, it says that the Las Vegas shooter, Stephen's brother, I believe it is, Stephen Spadak. No, that is the suspect, Stephen Spadak. The gunman was reportedly prescribed anti-anxiety medication before the attack. And it says that Stephen Spadak, the accused shooter in Las Vegas massacre, was reportedly prescribed an anti-anxiety drug in June, according to the Las Vegas Review Journal reported. And it says that the outlet reported the news after obtaining records from the Nevada Prescription Monitoring Program. The records show Spadak had been prescribed 50 10-milligram diazepam tablets on June 21st. According to the outlet, the brand name of the drug is Valium, and it is a sedative hypnotic drug that can cause aggressive behavior when abused and trigger psychotic episodes. Those experiences are further amplified with alcohol. A retired FBI profiler, Jim Clement, said in an interview that investigators may be able to prove if Spadak had some kind of neurological disorder if his suicide did not destroy his brain. Well, this is interesting because there's so many different reports. Some say he committed suicide, and others say he was shot by the FBI who entered his room because he was shooting at them. So there's lots of different stories going on here. The genetics load the gun, personality and psychology aim it, and experiences pull the trigger, typically, Clement said, while adding that Spadak's father, an alleged bank robber, was diagnosed as being a psychopath. So these are really serious issues for not only the patients who receive prescription drugs, but also for the doctors who are prescribing these drugs and maybe don't know that the person has a mental disorder. And then we look at Big Pharma, who produces so many prescription drugs. And when we hear about all the adverse side effects that can cause a person to be suicidal or homicidal or react in anger in a bad way, it's frightening to think that the American people are drugged out today, because there are more Americans on opioids today prescribed by doctors that rival illegal heroin. And so this is a serious issue, and I'm glad they're looking into it, and they're going to try to find out if this was the catalyst that caused him to shoot hundreds and hundreds of people at the Route 91 concert. And there were two windows blown out. Looked like maybe he shot them out. But on the police scanner, the police were talking about three shooters, and then they were talking about the fourth floor, the 29th floor, the 32nd floor. Other witnesses were saying that they saw shooting from the fourth floor as well. So there's a lot of different pieces of the puzzle, and it's really one of the most confusing scenes and tragedies that we've encountered, where maybe it's a lone shooter and maybe it's not a lone shooter. I guess we'll just have to wait and see what the police, the investigators, the FBI come up with, and hopefully they'll be able to put the pieces together and bring this situation to a close. So God bless America, and may God comfort and bless all of the families and the victims that were at the concert that evening in Las Vegas. And on that note, we are going to enter into the world of authors and experts, and we will be back in just a moment on Columbo Chronicles Live. You're listening to The Rose, so don't touch that dial.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Listening is an art. An art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Columbo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Columbo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to ColumboChronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Columbo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, ColumboChronicles.com.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, because we are about to enter into the world of authors and experts. And boy, do we have a wonderful author with us this evening. It's his first novel. He's a versatile person whose expertise expands into many different areas in science. His name is Mark Kingston Levin. He's a PhD, and he is the author of a very popular science fiction book, because it's really getting a lot of popularity out there, 30th Century Escape, and it is receiving rave reviews. He's about to receive an Irwin Literary Award on October 11th from the Book Publicists of Southern California for the best science fiction book of the year, and his book is the first of a trilogy. He can talk about science and climate change, and we are all interested in that because we're wondering, is it real or is it a hoax? And he can also talk to us about his book, and also he is a pilot who flew into hurricanes and survived. That is definitely a dangerous gig. So let's say hello to Mark Kingston Levin and welcome him to Columbo Chronicles Live. Hello, Mark. I hope you're having a great evening, and welcome to Columbo Chronicles Live.
Well, thank you for having me, and I am having a great evening. I hope all of you are having a great evening tonight.
Yeah. Great. You know, science fiction, most people like science fiction, and you're writing a trilogy, and so that's rather exciting, especially in this day and age with all the different UFOs, aliens, robotoids, humanoids, clones, all of these different things that are happening in our society that we hear about. We don't know if they're real or not. So science fiction is on everybody's mind. So why don't you tell us what is the main theme of your book and who inspired you the most to write a book?
Well, first, the person who inspired me the most to write was a fellow named P.A.M. Dirac, Paul Adrian Morris Dirac. He's a Nobel Prize winner. He was born in Bristol, England. His father was from Switzerland, the French part of Switzerland, and his mother was British. He's the one who predicted antimatter and founded quantum mechanics along with a fellow named Erwin Schrödinger. So he was my inspiration. As we both got older, we became friends, and his daughter is a professor out at the Scripps Oceanographic Institute, part of the University of California, San Diego. And he would come out here sometimes to visit her, and we would have dinner, and he would tell me that he wanted to give me the baton. I said, "What baton?" He said, "Well, I'm getting older, and I've been working in cosmology." And so he explained to me what he was doing. He said, "I should pick it up." And I said, "Well, you know, I've been working in quantum mechanics, very small stuff. Now you want me to work in the very big stuff." Well, I started working in the very big stuff. So anyway, which also inspired me for this book was because as I started working on the explaining the expansion of the universe and why the expansion is now accelerating, after many billions of years, we have to look for where's that energy coming from? What kind of force can do that? It turns out if you converted that energy into mass, it'd be 70% of the universe. Dark matter is 25%, and that holds the universe together. And then the matter that we see, like all the planets and the people and the sun and the stars and the moons and all of that, and all the hydrogen gas out there is 5% of the universe, according to these calculations of the latest scientists. And I pretty much agree with them in some ways that if you run the calculations this way, those are the numbers you get. That's part of the inspiration. Well, how do you solve these problems and figure out what really is going on? And you have to come up with new theories and, my main character, Jennifer, who was born in the 30th century and grew up in this marvelous world where, you know, the world is much wealthier than it is today and there's no disease and nobody goes hungry. So it's a wonderful, optimistic world that we're going to be moving to. I don't know that we're going to make it that long, but I see an optimistic future. But, I mean, problems will occur and it turns out in this book, in the 27th century, the humans decide they want to go to the space. The robots have already been there, and they want to send men to settled planets. And the problem is that it's going to take 150 years, and there's so much radiation. So they create the Sindos, who there turns out to be a bacteria who that's a real that repairs its own DNA and chromosomes has that knowledge. And they put that in the new synthetic by modifying embryos. They were able to do various changes and make them stronger and taller because some planets are going to go to are going to be more gravity. Some are going to be less gravity. And some are going to be colder and some are going to be warmer. So they have to be able to take a wider range of temperatures and other things. But anyway, this great race of people were sent out and they settled 8 different planets or systems, including Mars, which has already been settled by human and terraformed some years earlier. But as we approach the 30th century, their population starts to grow rapidly because humans, mothers, decide to have their embryos upgraded so their kids would be more competitive. And this drives the population to eventually dominate and be more than 50% of the population. And that's what's happening in the 30th century. And there's a group of Sindos who don't like humans because they have a mixed marriage. And this leads to conflict and secret society of scientists promote Jennifer, as she's first just a undercover agent, but she finds out that the Sindos are planning to introduce a sterility drug in the water and essentially eliminate all humans to preserve the purity of the Sindo race. So This is the basic theme, and in the book, and she goes back in time, leads a group of 50 people, and she sends them to the 27th century when the Sindos were first made, so they can be their DNA can be corrected, so they won't have these tendencies, what we call the lack of moral compass. And that's what the book's about. And then she comes back to the 21st century, and it's a little bit of a mystery, and it's a mystery to her, but she's very drawn to this 21st century. She was also a historian, had a PhD in history, and studied the 21st century. She was an archaeologist as well, and to accomplish her mission, there's just horrendous obstacles, but she never gives up, and she keeps fighting on. So it's a story about her.
That is really intriguing, and in some ways it touches on what's going on today, or people believe are going on today, or think are going on today in many different areas, because, you know, they're experimenting with DNA and all of that. So
they are, yes.
Yes, they are, and so it's kind of scary. So why did you choose to write science fiction versus, since you enjoy science, something more scientific?
Well, I have written a number of scientific documents. So I was thinking of doing something more, let's say, where I can express my vision of the future in an entertaining way, because I love to entertain people. And this is probably primary reason why I chose to write fiction. Fiction is just a form of entertainment. And today, the science fiction has become hot. I mean, they make a lot of movies out of it. The Martian did very well. Andy Weir was a good writer, but he wrote hard science fiction, which means that the science fiction is based on real science. And so I decided I was going to try to write the science fiction of the distant future based on real science. So that was a challenge for me, but that's what I did. And not that I can say 100% of this is going to come true. Nobody can. Just like in climate change, you know, we can't take the models we have and reproduce the past temperature changes with the models. We have a good record of what happened to the temperature changes from the mud in the ocean and from the ice cores, all the different data that we've gathered over the years. We have a pretty good idea what the temperature was in any given year, or was certainly within 10 years by looking at isotopes and isotope ratios and different things. So when we've constructed this thing and then we take these models and we try to make them play it back, they don't do it. So that means that our model. We don't have a good model of clouds. We don't have a good model of the sun. We don't know what its magnetic field strength and how it works. We know roughly what its strength is, but we don't know how it changes the sun. And we don't know a lot about it accurately. When you start a model, you have to get initial conditions. You have to measure everything at the same time. That means the weather. You have to measure temperature everywhere. You have to measure wind. And it's very hard to do that. So you only measure at certain points, like at airports. And we don't know all the data that's in between, all over the ocean and over all these places. So the models are just not accurate at this time. Hopefully someday they'll be a lot more accurate. They're more accurate than they were 10 years ago, but they're still not quite there. So that's why you have so much controversy, because some scientists say, nobody's saying that the temperature is not rising and climate doesn't change. It's changed over from the beginning of time. 600 million years ago, we had a snowball Earth. The ice was everywhere, including on the equator. And miles thick ice over most of the globe, over land, and thinner over water. But this was what we had. And then 500 million years ago, we had the Cambrian, what's called the Cambrian explosion, and it was just where many forms of life developed all at once and rapidly in rapid changes, and moved onto land and ended up making all of us. So there are ups and downs along the way. As climate did change, it did cause major problems but it was a driving force for evolution, climate change. And so climate change.
Well, it's changing changing as we're speaking.
Yeah, it is.
In fact, the oceans are receding in some areas of the world drastically, and they don't know why. And then we have all of these fish and mammals that are dying and wash up the shore, whales and penguins and porpoises and fish, and people don't have an explanation for it. Then we have the birds also falling out of the skies, and the bees are becoming less seen.
Yeah, we have a major problem with the disease in bees right now. Yeah.
Oh, we do? I didn't know that.
We have a disease problem, with some bees, And so they're working to try to find a cure, and try to isolate those.
So is this all these changes that we know for sure are changes? We can see them with our eyes. Thank God for the internet, because we can see around the world now. And do you contribute that to climate change?
No, not necessarily. Climate's always changing, so it's changing now. It's changing a little faster than normal right now. And we're getting a little bit higher, the rate of rise is a little bit higher. But the last ice age, at the end of the last ice ages last about 100,000 years, really maybe about 115,000 to 120,000 years. But we just round off so 450,000 years ago, we had an ice age, and we had one, we're just coming out of one. We've been about 11, to almost 12,000 years. And usually they last for 14,000 years, but sometimes a little less, what's called the interglacial period. And all our civilization really developed since the last ice age, although humanoids have been around, and Neanderthals were around before the last ice age, and so were humans. But we've been around, but mostly in Africa, and we didn't spread all over the globe. But whatever happened, the ice age... in some way helped, and it's very useful in helping push evolution, because when the humans were stressed, they then had to learn how to put clothes on themselves, and we find the Iceman, and he used various types of shoes, and he put insulation, grass inside them. and we find his skeleton. I don't know if you saw that program on TV, but it was very unique. This was, he was very humanoid. He lived near the glaciers probably 10,000 years ago. So that was just coming out of the Ice Age. But Ice Age lasts for 100,000 years. Well, the oceans were 5 meters higher at the peak of the last interglacial period, which would be about 120,000 years ago or 125,000 years ago, something in that time frame. And we can measure those, again, with the various techniques that scientists have of measuring oceans. So it's not unusual that we're going to be 5 meters higher than we are now. That was at the end. That was the peak. So we will have a peak, and you get the warmest point at the peak because you get the oceans warming. Then it starts to cool, and we'll go through another cycle. Now, I don't think that, the globe is going to warm and prevent the next ice age. But the ice age is going to be a lot more difficult to live in for, the humans in the next few thousand years than a slight warming period. So, and yes, we're going to have problems in Florida, South Florida. If you own property there, I wouldn't sell it today, but I would definitely think about the problems, because South Florida is about 10 feet maximum. I'm not saying oceans are going to raise 10 feet, but I think the oceans will eventually rise quite a bit higher than they are today, probably, therefore take advantage of what we do know. And, San Diego's a good place to be. We're higher. In some places we're raising up, like the tectonic forces are causing some parts to rise, and they have for over millions of years. And also some parts sink, like Mission Bay, and you've got near La Jolla, Mount Soledad is rising.
What about the glaciers? The glaciers, they say, are all melting. So how does that play into this global warming and climate change?
Well, that happened last cycle. Every cycle, the same thing goes over and over again. In the past, million years or so, we've had just one cycle after another. That's about 100,000 years of ice, and that means 2 miles thick ice over North America, good part of it, like Canada, and down towards New York and Cleveland and Chicago and all those places. And, was the glaciers that dug out the Great Lakes for us. So the glaciers aren't all bad. The Great Lakes are wonderful, and we can't do much about it. I mean, in the future, we might be able to. The more we understand about it, the could do geoengineering and change things. But I think it's going to be very difficult to stop an ice age. I know the monks tried it during the 1700s. There was a mini ice age. And there's this, we've got sweat cold in they had a big church there in a small village. And the monks all got up there and prayed, and the ice kept coming, and pretty soon there was no more village. So that can happen. The Vikings was a very warm period. They settled Greenland a few hundred years later. Mini ice age came, these are mini ice ages, not the real ice age, but just meaning a colder period where the ice in Greenland started to freeze, and they couldn't get their animals out of the barns until, like July, and then end of August, the ice was starting up again, and they died out.
So what about all of these floods? then, do you contribute that to climate change, or because there's floods happening all over the world?
Yeah, but they happen all the time. We always have had floods. The reason we have so much more damage now is that people are being allowed to build in the floodplain, an area where we know it's going to flood. Yeah, that's been true now for, 50 years or so. They take the gamble, they have 50-year flood. And yeah, this is another 50-year flood, and we've had two of them in the last, 25 years. Yeah, we maybe have more of them now, but they go up to the 50-year level. But the extensive damage is because more people, more area, and more people, more building in the floodplain, and that has a lot to do with it. So, but yes, we are having a little faster, and that's because somewhat the ocean is a little bit there's more ocean. So when it gets warmer, the liquid expands and it becomes, becomes higher. And the level of the ocean is creeping up, and it will cause storms to flood more than they would have, say, a number of years, a century ago. But we've had, severe floods in the 20s and different places. But, we were having drought in California just 5 years ago. It lasted for about 4 years. And then we had one rainy season and the reservoirs got all filled up. So things,
and the same thing
happened in Texas. They had a drought, really bad drought. And, I have a daughter who lives in Texas. She's married to a cowboy and they have a ranch. And, they were having to buy for their cattle. They were having to buy food because normally they grow it all, but everything was flooded out. they couldn't get it, so they had to buy. And now they don't have any problem. There's lots of rain and everything is growing and big harvest this year. They like the rain. They're happy we're getting
yes.
rain, because when it's a drought, it's really bad. But it's not for the people who are in the high part of the hill country. She's in the hill country. It's not so bad. But people down here in Houston, it's really bad. Yeah, down near the river there.
Yeah, so I can understand how your background would provide you with excellent opportunity to write a science fiction book, such as 30th Century Escape and your three trilogies. And you're an expert on this issue, which most people aren't, so we get little, I'm fascinated listening to you, and I'm sure the listeners are too, because we get so little information on climate change. We just get a lot of political ranting, and
yeah.
everybody's mm-hmm. like, well, is it a hoax? Is it real? What are they talking about? And so to me and my audience who enjoy this information and take it all in, I really want to thank you for that, because it gets bends our minds and helps us to think. So I can't wait to read your book, 30th Century Escape. And just for those who, who enjoy science fiction, I want to let you know that we're talking to Mark Kingston Levin, and he is a PhD. He is an author. He's receiving an Irwin Literary Award by the Book Publishers of Southern California for the best science fiction book of the year, and it's getting rave reviews. So this is just part one, and there's going to be part two and part three coming up. So why don't we take a break, because I want to ask you how long you've been writing and what publications you have been published in, and also what cultural values you see in writing. And we'll be back in just a minute, so stay with us and don't touch that dial. This is Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite. Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Hi, we're back on Columbo Chronicles Live, and we're going to return to Authors and Experts Corner with our versatile and very exceptional guest, Mark Kingston Levin. He is a PhD, an author, and he wrote the science fiction book, 30th Century Escape. It is a trilogy, and he's also a pilot, so we'll have to ask him about that as well. Hi, Mark. We're back on Authors and Corners. Authors and Corners, Authors and Experts. And I wanted to ask you about your writings. What did you write about in the past, your scientific publications, and what was your interest there? And then also, what cultural values do you see in writing?
Okay, well, first let me talk a little bit about what I've written, probably over 33 patents in the U.S. and a number of them abroad. Some included things like sensors for detecting submarines under the ice and means of measuring sound velocity from airplanes and other sensing devices. Most of them use quantum mechanics, which is some form of electromagnetic radiation, and some use superconductors and other types of things. But those are the many of my publications, and I have 40 additional publications in the scientific literature that vary from radiation effects on crystals to contamination effects of ammonium perchlorate, one of the major rocket fuels. The solid rockets are all like the boosters for the space shuttle, which we don't have anymore, but the new boosters are also going to be made out of ammonium perchlorate. So all of this was an important part of my early career, where I did work a lot in rocket science. And then later on, I formed a company and worked in oceanography, airplane oceanography. And I did fly into hurricanes as a part of that, and invented techniques for measuring sound channels of Project Stormwater, where we'd fly before the hurricane. The NOAA would be inside the hurricane, and they would direct us where to go. We would go in front of the hurricane, except once in a while the hurricane would change. Wouldn't stay going straight. We'd get hit. But we'd fly in front of it, drop our probes, and then after it went by, we'd go and drop our probes again. So that was, and then we'd measurement and we'd develop a theory for these sound channels because they come right over Cuba, and then those hurricanes go right over the into the U.S. and the Russians, which have bases in Cuba, could put their submarines in these sound channels and could drop things off close to our shore, and we'd never know about it. So we had to keep track of those. Back at, that was back in the 70s, the height of the Cold War, and these were all high priorities for the government. So I was very fortunate that I got the government funding and got my company built up, and then I sold it to Spartan Electronics, and then I worked there for a year or so. And then I went into the White House as a science advisor, three levels down. Okay, yeah, I'm not the top one. I'm the third one down. So that's
well, that's pretty impressive.
That. Yeah, spent a couple of years doing that, and then I moved on. And but it's that background that helped me write a lot of diverse things. I wrote things about how to extract energy out of the ocean using it didn't actually work, but we built a big system in Hawaii and tested it. And it's good for one thing. You bring up the cold water and you get very good. It's like an artificial upwelling, and you get just like you do in the tuna area off of Peru, you get very good fishing, and you could also bring the water in. And in Hawaii now, they're growing cold water lobsters with that cold water, and they have good agricultural program there. Yeah, so they're doing a lot of neat things with the cold water. Still, they've got it. They have to pump it up, and basically, the problem with the theory is that you get growth in the heat exchangers, and cleaning out those heat exchangers is very difficult. So that makes it difficult. Someday they may learn how to put an electric current on there and keep the biotech the biotechnology critters away, and they tend to grow first little crustaceans, and you get all these plant organisms and algaes. And then finally get barnacles. So getting barnacles off are not an easy thing. So it's just just like the bottom of a ship, the same thing happens. If you don't clean it and scrape it and paint it, you get the growth. So that was probably the, that was an interesting time development. People are trying to develop ways of extracting wave energy and all different forms of energy. They're probably the best are solar on the roof and on your roofs because you've already got the roof structure there. Because if you build a huge structure, it's going to take up, in order to power like the United States, you'd have to have something the size of the state of Missouri, and you're better off growing crops. Because the cost and efficiency, you're better off growing crops with your land. So the desert is a place where you can do some more of this stuff. But, you got to be careful where you do it and how you do it. And even the desert has critters and ecosystems that live. And if you put that out over there, they're not going to live because they're not going to get the sun. And they need sun's energy. Mm-hmm. So we have trade-offs, and we have to be reasonable. And the best, I think, of solar is on the roof. It's on the roofs of your homes, and maybe on the roofs of your car. Keep your things like that.
Okay. You have very extensive background. It's really, you've done a lot and done a lot for the country, basically. So, but I did this one sentence I did read that intrigued me. It says, I want to show that machines can be the good guys. What does that mean?
Well, in my book, the good guys, in particularly in the trilogy, in the last one of the trilogy, there is a artificial intelligence that's put into an asteroid, to in order to stop a real Holocaust, which would wipe out the entire Earth in the 57th century. So we're moving out, you know. So this robot and artificial intelligence system is built into Vesta, which is our largest asteroid. Because Ceres used to be called an asteroid, is now upgraded to a dwarf planet like Pluto. So it's in between Mars and Jupiter in the asteroid belt, but it's pretty good size. And they send this to, there's two neutron stars that are orbiting each other, and eventually they're going to collide. And when they collide, they form a black hole. But in the process, they give off so much energy that it is like the, almost like the entire energy of the Milky Way in a week. And that intense energy coming out of them will destroy any atmosphere and destroy the planet Earth as well as Mars, and sterilize them, essentially. So in order to prevent that, it is the machine that, and that's going to book three, the machine that goes out and does it. And on his way, this is a very long trip, it's able to reproduce itself and create a child. And how it does that is an amazing thing. You just have to read the book.
Well, I can't wait to read the book.
that's the third book, so that will be in March. I plan the third book to come out in March, and the second book probably to come out in December. Yeah.
Fantastic. So writing your books, and especially your first book, 30th Century Escape, do you feel that with your background, your expansive background, and your love for writing, that you achieved whatever it is that you feel you wanted to project to the audience that will be reading your book?
Well, you know, that really is up to the audience to make that decision. I tried to impart entertainment, you know, some warning that we have to be careful with the DNA on humans, but the main thing I really want to show is that no matter how bad things get, if you really work hard, you can overcome almost anything. And I want to give a very positive spin to humanity and that what we can accomplish. And I try to do it through this main character, Jennifer. And she's a very special woman from the 30th century, but she has a heart just like people do today. And she has a heart of gold and tries to do a lot of good. And I think she's able in the end to overcome her limitations and rise to the occasion. But it is the artificial intelligence that is the winner. He, you know, not only when he goes out, he, you know, he has to destroy himself in order to do it. He does it willingly. He's not really a he or a she. It's an it. But I don't want to make that a good point because I don't want people to get confused. No, there are no sexes here in the artificial intelligence world at this time. Maybe someday they will, but they can still reproduce just like a machine today can make another robot. And eventually we'll have robots running factories that make robots. So,
I'm sure we will.
A good thing for us. Yeah.
Aside from your own background with all this knowledge you have about science, what are some of the other sources that you use to write your trilogy?
Everybody I've ever met and had a relationship with is somewhere in my book. Every place I've ever visited, not every place, but many of the places I visited, I try to write in the book because it's something I know about. So we try to write what we know about and what we love. And, I think I had some very, very good people in my life. I was very fortunate. My children inspired me in some ways to keep writing. When I got cancer, it's now cured.
Thanks
to Johnson & Johnson's Imbruvica. I'm so happy that, when I was sick, I didn't give up writing. But there were a few days when it was tough. I had, therapy and all these types of things, which sometimes are worse than the disease. But the newer drug that I had to take chemotherapy, and then I failed that, and then I took an immunotherapy, and then I got a new immunotherapy, and that was the only one that worked. So the first two didn't work, the third one worked, and so I just kept trying. The drug was $132,000 a year. So I was fortunate that the
The drug was worth. The drug cost what?
The drug cost $132,000 a year, and I think it still does. It's Imbruvica put out by Johnson & Johnson, and your insurance will pay about 80% of it. Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
Well, thank God they paid 80% because.
Yeah.
I mean. But thank God you did keep working, and thank God it helped you, and you can continue to write and be on Colombo Chronicles Live and share your information with us, because it's invaluable, and it's wonderful what we've learned about climate change tonight. And so if you had a message for our audience and you wanted to tell them what makes your book stand out, 30thCenturyEscape.com, and why they should buy it, what would that message be?
Well, first I say it's kind of the image I have of the future, and I'm trying to relay that. I'm trying to do it in a means that will entertain and maybe sometimes shock people a little bit, so that it's fun. Make it fun, to read. Sometimes I think that's the main thing. But there is a theme about society. There's a theme about working hard and never giving up. So that's kind of a secondary theme that's in the book. And I think that's...
I never give up. I always say never give up. And so what did you enjoy the most about writing this book?
You know what? When I write, I just feel pleasure. It's amazing. I enjoy writing. It's hard to get me to stop. So,
me too.
I also did a lot of I did a lot of research when I did the book. And, even though I'd been to, places in the South Pacific, when I was younger, they change. There were people there now, the population. I wanted to get everything right so the authors would trust me. So everything I verified that I put in there about current day stuff. I couldn't verify what's in the 30th century, unfortunately.
And where can they buy your book real quick?
Amazon.
Where can they buy your book? Amazon.com.
Amazon.
Very,
Amazon.
Very good. 30thCenturyEscape.com. Go to Amazon.com and be sure to get a copy of the first novel that our very special guest, Mark Kingston Levin, wrote. And you're going to enjoy this science fiction trilogy. And we can't wait for your next two books to come out. And I want to thank you so much for being on Colombo Chronicles Live with us tonight. And I hope you have a really pleasant evening.
Well, I thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it very much. It's great to talk to you. And I hope
you
all have your audience has a great day.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Bye.
And our guest has left the building. be sure to go out and get a copy of his book. It's Mark Kingston Levin, and he is a PhD author and an expert on climate change, and he is a pilot. He flew through hurricanes, as you heard, and that was rather intriguing as well and challenging. And so be sure to go to Amazon.com, and you're going to enjoy, as I'm going to get a copy and enjoy myself. So on that note, next week we have another special guest, and her name is Jo Salito. She's an investigator, and she's going to talk to us about homeowners insurance, because now that all these storms have been hitting around the country and other countries, people need this information. So we're going to try to help you out. So God bless you. God bless America. And remember, injustice can happen to you, and injustices can happen to me. But together, we can make a positive difference. Remember that you are never alone when you listen to Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and 11 to midnight for all you sleepyheads out there on the East Coast. Good night.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.